You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
The following program is produced in a timeshare agreement with Civic Media. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect those of Civic Media. Enjoy.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah.
David Hummer, you know, he got his money.
He did?
He got his money.
All right.
David Hummer's going to open up the Wausau Club.
Yeah, exciting news.
He got his money. I don't know exactly, but I want to hear it. Here, he called. Do you want to listen to the message?
Yeah.
Play it.
Hey, Ryan, it's David. Just want to let you know, everything is moving at record pace. Plumber got back, put the 4-inch T in the basement, the Integrity Fire Suppression, hooked up all of their stuff. It's a work of art down there. I just got back from Home Depot. They gave us $1,000 off on all of our toilets and sinks.
Ooh.
And
oh, Home Depot.
Okay.
Nice.
And faucets and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we're coming in at or under budget on almost everything.
Yeah, he sounds pretty pumped.
And
he sounds like he's in a good mood,
it's
man.
Going really well. I'm pumped.
He sounds stressed when we talk to him.
Electrician is coming back.
Oh, yeah, extremely
stressed. Well,
listen to him now.
Stuff.
He is
we just may be open December 6th, but it all depends on, you know, if I can pass that final inspection.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I tried calling him and he's not available right now. But
darn.
I wanted to hear what his reaction was when he found out that he got his money, because I guess a bunch of donors stepped up after they
heard
the interview or something with him.
Do we know who it was?
I wanted to find out.
Yeah, darn.
And I wanted to hear the emotion that he had, because he was really stressed out before. He's just like, it's a catch-22. I can't open to make money unless I have the money, but nobody's giving me enough money to open to make money.
He sounds like a new man now.
He's a new man, and I thought we'd get him on the horn and hear how he felt to get all that money.
Yeah.
So I thought if we can't get a hold of David Hummer, the next best thing was to maybe ask associate producer Matt to reenact how he felt maybe David Hummer
perfect
would have reacted.
Matt, hi.
How would he have reacted if he found out that he got the last $100,000 to open up the Wausau Club?
He would have been speaking.
Oh, no. You're acting hat.
Put on your acting hat, Matt.
I'm speechless.
Okay, all right, Matt Hunter. Associate producer Matt.
Yeah. Oh, and he's shedding a tear, too. That's how he would have felt.
Good for
compose
you, man.
Compose yourself. Here's a Kleenex.
He's a better actor than I thought he'd be. That's pretty good.
Get on with episode 65.
This is the Wausau Business Show. Now, here are your cow tipping, ice fishing, polka dancing, beer brock frying, cheese curd loving hosts, Ryan and Paul.
Salt blocks out, Paul, and the 50-pound bags of whole corn, because it's almost Deer Hunter Widow's weekend.
That time of year, buddy.
Not the second week of deer camp, but the first coming
right.
up.
I think we're at it as of this morning, as of dawn.
Sure.
Deer camp started.
Let's call it the Wausau Business Show.
Yeah.
Episode number 65.
All right.
What we got coming up on the show this week, Paul?
Oh, we got a lovely.
Lovely is right. Some
good
call him
fella.
The most attractive, loveliest man in Wausau.
Yeah, his name is Dr. Matthew Ashbrenner.
Dr. Matt.
He's an eye surgeon.
One T, right?
Yeah, M-A-T, Matt, I think.
An eye surgeon at the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin.
Correct.
And they have locations all over the place, so we can't wait to hear that.
Yeah.
And then he's got Infused, which is a club.
A really cool events space. We're going to be there live.
Yeah. We're going over there to talk to Matt about Infused, which is one of the coolest places in Wausau. If you haven't heard about it, hang on, because he's going to tell us all about it. It looks like something out of New York.
And there's a lot to check out there, so I'm hoping we can get some sort of tour or something.
Yeah, he's got a kind of a back special space that he's going to take us into too. He's yeah, got like
some cool stuff stored there.
Collection of classic cars.
And doesn't he have a green thumb too?
And he's got a green thumb.
This guy, wow.
Yeah, he's easy on the eyes. He's got a green thumb.
Yeah, he can take care of plants and he's doesn't kill them.
Classic cars.
Don't forget he's an eye doctor.
He should be easy on the eyes if he's an eye doctor.
Yeah, right.
Surgeon. And we got a Wausau business rumor.
Oh, you know I love that.
Well, before we get into the rumor, let's start with
hot off the press.
Wausau business fact.
Okay.
This is a fact.
Okay.
The new Hy-Vee store in Wausau recently sold, according to the Wausau Daily Herald, a $7.1 million megabucks ticket.
You're kidding me already? They just opened.
Pretty good PR.
Yeah, very good PR.
However,
we're
going to counter the suspiciously good public relations that they just... It's 7.1. Somebody walked out of there with $7.1 million.
Wow.
I don't know who it... It doesn't say who it was. 7159 Wausau, if you're the lucky winner.
Yeah, I want to know who bought the ticket there.
7-1. Well, they could have... I wonder if the next... So it got to the decimal, the tenth decimal point there.
Okay.
And if it went to the hundredths,
yeah,
maybe it's a five. So you win 715.
Oh, would that be great?
And 715. I wonder what the exact amount is.
Let's find out.
7159 Wausau, you can call if you are the winner of the $7.1 million.
Yeah, if you're ready to come out and let people know,
come on out.
Yeah.
Come on out. So this good Hy-Vee, somebody walked into the Hy-Vee and got a megabucks ticket and walked out with $7.15 million. Let's just pretend it was 7.15.
Yeah, I like that.
Round up.
I like that. Good publicity for Wausau, though.
Great publicity. Now we've got a Wausau business rumor that might counteract that good publicity.
Okay.
Here we go. Wausau business rumor. So on one hand, you had somebody walk out of the Hy-Vee, the new Hy-Vee that replaced the county market in Wausau, with $7.1 million.
Made their day.
Made the day in the megabucks winning ticket.
Yep.
On the other hand, Wausau business rumor.
The other shoe's going to drop.
Rumor is, on Facebook, this rumor is boiling up.
Okay.
That Hy-Vee has lost power recently.
Oh.
And you cannot, as a patron, walk in there and buy any meat, seafood, or deli products.
Well, what can you buy then?
It's all spoiled, apparently.
Oh, no. What?
Nothing from the, quote, Chinese place or other hot food area.
Okay.
So apparently there was a new, or was that a county market thing?
I don't know. I've actually been in there once earlier this week.
Did you see the Chinese place?
No, I don't know what that means. Okay. Maybe they mean the neighbor Chinese place.
And all the freezers are blocked off, so you can't buy anything out of the freezers in Hy-Vee. The dry goods, though, Paul, are available.
Oh, I could imagine that. Yeah.
And there's only two working checkout lanes.
Well, we can't confirm if this is true or not.
This is a rumor, a Wausau business rumor. But, you know, maybe they're just, you know, converting the store over from county market, give them the benefit of the doubt a little bit.
Maybe it's part of the plan, even. I don't know.
So hopefully it'll all come together for Hy-Vee. Not a great, I mean, on one hand, you had a great opening.
Yeah.
Somebody walks out with $7.15 million. On the other hand, you got a Wausau business rumor to contend with.
Yeah. Hopefully Hy-Vee makes it out of there. I'm rooting for any Wausau business.
Either way, welcome to Wausau, Hy-Vee. Thanks
happy
for the donation to one of our Wausonians. All right. Also coming up on the show this week, one of the top three contenders for the Friend of a Friend competition for $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
Julie. We're going to be talking to her coming up after Dr. Matt.
Perfect.
All right. We'll be right back on the Wausau Business Show with Matt Ashburn.
Yeah.
One T. Oh, this is Scatman, Paul.
I'm a
Scatman. It's like he's, sounds like he's gargling.
Yeah, okay. Can you give me an impersonation of that, please? Pretty good, actually.
I'm a Scatman. We'll be right back.
The John Madden and Pat Summerall of Wausau Radio. Just keep them away from the turducken. Ryan and Paul are at your service on the Wausau Business Show.
For over 130 years, Ameriprise Financial has helped millions of Americans retire on their terms by providing advice for their unique goals. Stop in today at Strongbridge Wealth Advisors, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Advisors, LLC, and develop a customized plan for your retirement. Call Strongbridge Wealth at 715-849-3697. Office is located at 2711 Stewart Avenue, Wausau, Wisconsin. Visit us online at strongbw.com. Not FDIC or NCUA insured. No financial institution guarantee. May lose value. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
The Wausau Business Show. She'll let you take her home. What's her appetite? She'll lay you on the throne. She got Betty Davis eyes. She'll take a tumble on you. Roll you like you were dice. Until you come out blue. She's got Betty Davis eyes.
Hey, you shot my buck.
Did.
It's the Wausau Business Show. Paul, you going out there this weekend?
Don't I always?
Did you get anything already or not?
Not yet. It's pretty early.
How many hours morning. Did you spend in the stand this morning before the show?
I got up at dawn, so I only about an hour.
Oh, yeah? How many acres you got hunting on?
55.
50? Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Okay. In other Thank news, you. Matt Ashbrenner. Here we go. We're going out to Infuse. Let's go with Dr. Matt. Matt Ashbrenner.
Hey, Matt.
Hello.
It's a nice Nutcracker sweatshirt you're wearing there.
Tis the season for the Nutcracker. My girls are little ballerinas. Big shout out to the Central Wisconsin School of Ballet. Yeah. So as everyone knows, it's Nutcracker season. So
When's that going this year?
This year it is going to be Saturday, December 6th. Okay. There are two shows, and then Sunday, December 7th.
And we're sitting at the bar at your, it's called Infused, but what do you refer to this as? An event space or a bar or?
I think it's an event space. I think it's a bar. I think it's whatever people want it to be. It's essentially a communal gathering. So
it is
beautiful.
A very hidden gem here on the Riverwalk in downtown Wausau. What's the address that we're at?
It is 180 East Wausau Avenue.
Yeah, it's the coolest place that you'd never expect. It kind of feels like almost like a speakeasy in a way.
Yeah, it's got a great vibe. We've been lucky enough to come here a couple of times.
Anybody that comes here, you walk in and there's plants all over. Paul, you said it was mahogany. I don't think it's
smells like mahogany. I'm supposed to say that.
But it's a beautiful, beautiful, you know, polished concrete floors and just a gorgeous place that feels like something out of Chicago or New York City.
Got a big city vibe.
And you'd never realize that looking at it from the outside. So what are you looking to achieve by opening this, Matt?
We just wanted a space for people to gather. So the idea of Infused was kind of a mixture of my idea as well as my wife Kristen's idea. We, post-COVID, were like everybody. We were stir crazy. We wanted to get back together with friends. We wanted to be able to, you know, dine, gather, have a good time. We knew that our house, although can host lots of people, we wanted something to host more. And then I also wanted a place to grow plants. And so my vision was to have an indoor greenhouse. And originally, when I thought about purchasing the building, I was just going to make a large indoor botanical garden. However, I felt that in Wausau, although a lot of people would come to the botanical garden once, very few people would come to the botanical garden multiple times. And also, I kind of felt like it could not be all that sustainable. And so Kristen kind of thought of the idea of like, you know, we should have an event space. And from that, we were going to do more of a mocktail bar vibe, but because of a number of things that happened, including the development of Forward Beverage, we also got our liquor license. And so we kind of are a full service bar. We kind of pride ourselves into good craft cocktails, mocktails, anything infused, whether it be, you know, liquor that's infused, water that's infused, oils that's infused. Ooh. And then we like growing the plants. And so the kind of whole vision from beginning to end is to grow the herbs, grow the citrus trees, grow everything that we then infuse into our drinks.
Brilliant. And you said vision there. You're a visionary of this place, but you're also a vision surgeon, right? You're an eye surgeon?
That is correct.
My
day job is a physician at the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin. I'm a vitreoretinal surgeon, which means nothing to anybody.
Yeah, God bless you.
But basically, if you have a problem with the back of your eye, which is predominantly the retina, which is responsible mainly for vision. I'm the type of person that you see and take care of. There are a lot of individuals in North Central Wisconsin who have a disease which is called macular degeneration.
Yeah.
It happens as you get older.
Yeah, my grandpa had that.
Most people who have it are of Northern European ancestry. So people who you think of being in the northern part of Europe, which is a lot of what is settled in North Central Wisconsin. So your Scandinavians, your Germans, your English, their eyes wear out. And we know it's genetic. We don't know exactly why the gene became predominant in people Northern European ancestry, but it exists.
Yeah, yeah.
And then because of that, the body starts making blood vessels, which are abnormal and they're bad and they cause terrible vision loss. And there's a way to treat that with injections. So the good news is we can treat it. The bad news is the injections last a month. So every month I have a crew of patients that come in and get their injections with me. So I've grown to have a large practice because we basically cover from Wisconsin Rapids to Canada. So if you have an eye care problem and you live north of Wisconsin Rapids and south of Canada, you're probably coming to the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin for your eye care.
You're all over in Medford over. And Antigo and Moses.
Medford, Antigo, Merrill, Rhinelander. We also have satellites in Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids. We're everywhere.
And then you're a partner?
Correct.
But do you travel to all those locations or does everybody have to come to you here in Wausau?
Not every single partner travels everywhere. However, every single partner does travel. I travel to Rhinelander, Wisconsin. I have a outreach clinic that I go one day a week. Most of us travel anywhere from 4 to 6 days a month.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then our Rhinelander office is really the hub to the UP in far northern Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay. So, and as a partner, that means you're an owner in the company with how many others?
Correct. So right now at the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin, we have 7 optometrists, 12 essentially physicians. 10 of us are owner partners. We are actually the largest eye clinic in the state of Wisconsin that is not affiliated with a university. So wow. The only people that are larger than us are the University of Wisconsin-Madison, as well as the Medical College of Wisconsin.
And how you came in what year?
I came here in 2012.
That's what I thought. Here, right.
Yeah, essentially, you know, 13 years going into my 14th year. The way that our clinic is structured is we encourage all of our new employees to become partners, and almost all do. We have a very clear partnership track. We're actually quite a transparent group, which is why I think we're able to attract and retain talent.
How many employees do you guys have?
We have like 240 employees.
Okay.
So between our main hub in Wausau and then all of our satellite offices, you know, we have a plethora of employees, and it's a great place to work.
And it was started right here in Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
Yeah. Yeah. So two brothers, the Backer brothers, Gordon and William, or Bill Backer.
I called him Gordy.
Yep.
I didn't know him. Did you, Paul?
Gordy.
I didn't know Gordy. No.
Gordy and Bill started the clinic in 1963, and they fairly quickly grew and then needed a cohort of partners that we kind of consider all as part of the first generation. So I think Bill and Gordy are like the very first generation, but very quickly they knew they needed some partners. In my history, I think there was 4 partners that they got. And then from that group, they held on through basically the 70s and into the early 80s. They realized that ophthalmology was evolving because they were all general ophthalmologists and they needed subspecialists.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the first generation of subspecialty ophthalmologists came in Kevin Flaherty, who is a corneal surgeon.
Wow.
And so he was kind of the first generation of subspecialists. And then
surgeons are the kind of rock stars of the bunch.
It's just a little extra training that they get. Mm-hmm. We got a retinal doctor who joined. He was here for a bit. And then Matt Haddenhauer, who is the son of John Haddenhauer. John Haddenhauer was one of that original crew that came in with the Backers. He joined as our first glaucoma physician. Then we got a pediatrics and plastics physician by the name of Chris Galang, who continues to work there.
Wow.
And since that time, our glaucoma practice has grown to now we have 2 glaucoma physicians. Our retina practice has grown to 3 retinal physicians, and our cornea practice has grown to 2 cornea physicians. And so we still have general ophthalmologists as well. So we basically do everything that you need for the eye.
So what is the most prominent, like if someone would be close to blind, what is the furthest they can get from all near blindness to full complete vision again? What's the most extreme thing that you guys do related to vision?
Sure. So the number one cause of vision loss in the entire world, which is also the number one cause of correctable vision, essentially in the United States, are cataracts. And so cataracts worldwide it's hard for us to comprehend, but cataract surgery, although it has become very simplified, it's basically a 15 to 20 minute procedure. Patients are very surprised that they essentially walk in, they lie flat for 20 minutes, and then 20 minutes later, they see perfectly. Because of how good the surgery has become, very few Americans will lose vision due to a cataract. As long as you have access to healthcare, you get put into a system fairly early on. But you can imagine in very rural areas of the world, it's difficult to find cataract surgeons.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, there is a lot of mission groups as well as ophthalmology related groups that will take planes with OR equipment and they'll fly in. Nepal is one classic example. And these surgeons from the US, from the Americas, from Europe will go and they will do hundreds of cataracts in a day.
Wow.
And in a few weeks' time, they will save the vision of thousands of people. And these people will be near blinded due to how severe their cataracts are. And with a straightforward surgical procedure, people, their vision is essentially restored.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yeah. Most other eye diseases involve permanent types of vision loss or at least some portion of vision loss. Another good example, though, of severe vision loss that it can be very, very well restored are what are called corneal transplants. In fact, the first tissue of the human body that was successfully transplanted was the cornea. And so when people think of an eye transplant, it's actually a corneal transplant. The cornea is the part of the eye that is the clear part of the eye. It's kind of like the window to the eye.
Okay.
So a lot of patients will have diseases where the window will become frosted or clouded.
Yeah, I've seen that in elderly people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And by having a surgical procedure, you can essentially get a donor cornea from someone who has deceased, who has healthy tissue. You have that. And it's one of the most successful procedures because whereas most transplant require systemic immunosuppression, you usually just need drops. And often some corneal transplants patients will be able to stop drops after years and years of having a cornea, but it's just drops that you have to take. You don't have to take pills that affect your immune system.
Right.
So
your body adopts it. Yeah.
Correct. Rejection is actually quite low with the cornea. So it's a very successful procedure.
Paul, what was that surgery that you had to have done after your car accident?
I had cataract surgery. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin, had that done. Years after, they're speculating it's from a car accident where I had trauma to the eye.
Sure.
Over a dozen years prior to that, and eventually it led to, because it was just one eye.
Yep.
Which they say usually it comes in both or at least relatively close. And in my case, and also I was pretty young to have cataracts.
Very much so.
Yeah, so, but it was. It's 20 minutes and you can see perfectly again.
Now, things were getting cloudy in your eye?
Yeah, it was basically white.
Yeah.
It had gotten to the point where it was fully white.
And you had to go in.
Kind of.
Did Matt, was Matt the one that did it?
No, but one of your colleagues did.
Oh, okay. I do not do cataract surgery. So I have been trained to do cataract surgery, but the last time I did that was called residency. So as soon as you specialize into a fellowship, you tend to kind of stay in that lane. Mm-hmm. As a retina doctor, I take care of everything behind the cataract. So so there's lots of diseases that occur behind what we call the anterior segment. The anterior segment, the cataract is kind of the end of that. To have a traumatic cataract is quite common. The lens of the eye, although somewhat resilient, is definitely sensitive, as you can imagine a lot of the eye is. And so having a trauma can definitely accelerate cataract formation. And we think about that anytime a patient has what's called a unilateral cataract or a cataract only in one eye, we would always ask about any sort of trauma that occurs. And usually that's the case.
And, you did your residency at UNC?
Yes, I did my residency at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. And then as part of residency, which is your general ophthalmology training, I decided that I wanted to be a retina surgeon, which is an extra 2 years. I did that in St. Louis.
St. Louis, yeah.
Yeah, which is called the Barnes Retina Institute.
Can you explain that? Because it said that that's sort of a public-private place?
Yeah, so the Barnes Retina Institute, this is kind of what really started to ignite my entrepreneurship or my business thoughts, because when you're in medical school, you learn how to be a doctor, which in and of itself is an insane, long, complicated, a lot of information that you need to know. And so there's not really space. Yeah,
first semester kids that are in college, I'm going to be a doctor. Right. Sure you are. Okay. Well, here he actually is.
A dozen years.
So to take a side note from that, to take a little tangent, when I was a senior in high school going into
graduated my right at the top of his class, or was that John Sue?
I think they shared
it. Was it?
There were a couple of us as valedictorians. We're not going to name all of them. But anyways, so in 1998,
Wausau West,
Wasco Warriors, as I was going into my freshman year at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, I had a cousin who was entering kindergarten. And at that time, I didn't know I was going to be a vitreoretinal surgeon, but I was pretty sure I was going to be an ophthalmologist.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, I said, when you graduate from high school, I will be done with my school. And all my aunts and uncles looked at me as I'm telling this to my little cousin. And they're just like, this is, there's no way that's true. And it's like, no, you go to undergraduate for 4 years, you go to medical school for 4 years, and you go to residency for 4 years. That's four, crazy. 4 and 4 is 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I did an additional 2 years of this fellowship training.
That's in St. Louis.
In St. Louis, okay. Correct. So every time I would see my cousin and she was in third grade, fourth grade, I'm like, have you graduated high school yet? Cause like, I'm ready to be a doctor. So as part of being a doctor, it takes that amount of time. You don't learn a whole lot about business. However, at my last 2 years, because it was the first time that I was at a medical institution that was also a private practice, they taught us about the business of ophthalmology, the business of medicine, the business of healthcare. And that's where I became pretty interested. And I knew that no matter where I ended up, I would be in at least somewhat of a private practice, and I had some control because I was able to learn from my colleagues and mentors that they had a lot more control over their schedules.
Okay.
There was not the red tape frustration, which most doctors have to go through. There's lots of doctors, especially ambitious, enthusiastic doctors that want to be on the cutting edge of technology that you can imagine if you have to go through an administrative system, it can take years and years.
For approvals, training.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so by seeing that, I was like, I absolutely am going to end up in a private practice. I was pretty sure I wanted to end up back in Wisconsin. And, you know, when I was able to interview at the Eye Clinic Wisconsin and they needed a retina surgeon, I was very enthusiastic to come back. And
so is this your first actual job?
First and only job, yeah.
Oh, okay.
My first and only job out of training. We have, you know, quite a few of us as partners. It's our first and only job, and we have, you know, knock on wood, we have not had,
think about it.
Of who has left even since I've been there, meaning who came and left versus retired. I don't think we have.
The would be a great place to work.
Yeah.
How's George Whitteman doing? Is he still doing okay?
So George Whitteman is the reason that I'm an ophthalmologist.
I was walking
across stage with John Sue, you know, in 1998, as part of being one of the valedictorians. I was pretty sure I was going to be an ophthalmologist, but they had said Matthew Ashburner wants to go to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's going to study bacteriology and he's going to become an ophthalmologist. And George Whitteman came up to me and he said, what do you have for a job this summer? And I was like, I'm working construction. He's like, no, you're not. You're coming to work at the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin.
Nice.
So yeah. He offered me a job that summer, which I returned to for two more summers. And I, because of George Whitteman, very much was solidified that, yes, I wanted to be an ophthalmologist.
Wow. I worked, heartwarming.
Yeah, it was very, very heartwarming. I worked as a technician there and kind of did all the jobs that, you know, most entry-level people would do. So I very much at the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin have seen it from the beginning and now at the end as a physician.
And then Paul, you worked at the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin during that same time, did you not?
Yeah, one of the summers we had crossover. I don't know if you remember that. I was running around downstairs filing papers.
Oh, you were filing a microfiche?
I don't know what I was doing. It was a good experience though, yeah, but he seemed to be, he had a lab coat and everything. He was a real deal.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, Matt, congratulations on all of your success. What do you like to do for fun? I noticed you have some cars in the back there.
I do have some cars.
Old cars. Let's go back there and look at those in a sec. But what else do you do for fun?
My father likes to restore/drive old, predominantly General Motors cars.
Ooh,
so GM. I grew up around old cars, Buick, Chevrolets, Corvettes. And I kind of caught that bug and of course, enjoy old cars. I very much enjoy being outdoors. Our family camps as part of back over there. We got a little Shasta camper. We also in the wintertime, you know, love to do downhill skiing because got to do something in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. So, and our girls are very much involved in the Granite Peak ski team, a great organization here in Wausau. And then, you know, in the summertime, I enjoy swimming, water skiing, camping as much as possible. I enjoy athletics. Our kids have gotten us to really enjoy concerts. It seems like once a year we have to go to kind of a big concert.
Oh, so definitely. What was your last concert?
Benson Boone.
Oh, jumping backwards off the stage.
So I was forced by my children as well as the girls of the Central Wisconsin School of Ballet to grow a mustache. So
nice.
I did that for a period for Benson Boone. So all of my patients got to experience 6 weeks of Matt Ashburner with a mustache.
Mustache Matt.
Dr. Ashburner.
My wife will probably never let me grow one again, but it was a fun time, although the girls want me to grow back again. But yeah, Benson Boone was the last concert that we went to. It was phenomenal.
And so you're a ski dad, you're a nutcracker dad, yeah. You're a concert going dad.
Camping dad.
You're a camping dad. And you also, you made us an infused drink here. What do we have here?
I did. So this is a apple cider mule that we're drinking.
Okay.
So when you think of a mule.
He's strong.
So when you think of a mule, you think of essentially a copper mug. You think typically of lime juice as well as ginger beer. That's what gives it a bit of that kick and spice. And then you usually have it as a vodka based. However, for the fall, what we decided to do is we, instead of using the wash of water, we have apple cider. And then we added a little bit of cinnamon syrup as well as maple syrup for the sweetness to it. And then we have lime juice as well as some ginger beer. But that initial kind of kick is the ginger beer kick that you get. And so whereas most mules have this very crisp, summery flavor, this has some Christmas to it, crispness to it. But it also has kind of the warmth of essentially apple cider.
Yeah, it tastes like fall. It
tastes like the fall, yeah.
Cheers, guys.
So, cheers.
Cheers.
So right now we're transitioning from our kind of fall drinks to our winter drinks. I'm just about to later today batch up some of our winter drinks. I call it the Kris Kringle, which I found the recipe online, and then after I had it, it reminded me of brandy slushes. So do you guys remember when mom and dad would make brandy slushes?
Oh, yeah.
I know. I've never had a brandy slush.
So I'll have to get you guys back in for the wintertime for the Kris Kringle, because basically it's an orange juice. And then I had a bunch of thyme sitting around from Infuse. And so I made a thyme simple syrup. And so it's an orange juice, lemon juice with thyme simple syrup. And then I mixed that with brandy. And also added a little ginger beer to it. And most traditional Wisconsin slush recipes are sugar, brandy, orange juice, and ginger ale.
Okay.
And then some will have lemonade, some won't. So basically we've got kind of all that in there. So the flavor of thyme adds to a bit, reminiscent of a kid when you snuck, you know, your uncle's brandy slush, but then the thyme kind of comes forward and it has a little bit of an herbal feeling to it.
Very nostalgic.
So that's good. It's going to be on the winter menu. So anybody that has any events or stops in at a Fuse during our winter hours will be able to get the Kris Kringle.
What's best the cocktails in the area?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Best cocktails in the area.
Yeah.
Hands down.
What's the website?
So it's wasainfused.com.
Okay. If you want to book anything or learn more about Infused, this is Matt's second home and his office for the plants too.
You do a garden.
Yeah. Yes. It's very green, I will say.
You take care. So you have a real passion for horticulture? Is that what this is called?
Yeah, I guess so. In addition to everything else that I do, gardening has kind of come up my passion. There's something about gardening that it's nice because you can work with your hands, you can see results. The other part about gardening, which I've learned that I lose in my field because I'm so busy, is gardening requires patience.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned over time, although I've killed multitudes of plants, I've learned that you have to be patient with plants. And if you're impatient, that's why they tend to not do well. So when people are like, I have a black thumb, everybody can have a green thumb. It's not hard. You just have to step back. You have to take a deep breath and you have to be patient.
Yeah, because you have a greenhouse outside too, right?
We do. We have a greenhouse outside that we like to get our seedlings in right around Marchish time. And that's where a lot of our outdoor beds are growing. The herbs is from the greenhouse.
And how long have you been kind of passionate about that? Because you've got a lot going on in here.
So the infused plants started about, I would say, 8-9 years ago. So I was 3 to 4 years into my practice that I really started growing things, keeping things alive, having kind of an annual garden. And that's where a lot of the plants in our house were overflowing. And Kristen is it's either me or the plants. So I bought a warehouse and then we flipped it and turned it into an event space. Probably a patient care kind of thing, because the patient care day is very rewarding, but it's very exhausting because it's just go, 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 go.
Yeah.
We in America did a horrible job training enough medical professionals. I remember when I was in medical school and they talked about all of the baby boomers coming of age and becoming ill. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how we're never going to worry about a job. But at no point was anyone thinking maybe we don't have enough doctors and maybe we don't have enough stuff.
Yeah.
And we don't, that's why nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, in our case, optometrists have become so valuable, because what we in the medical field call mid-level practitioners, they're so valuable at establishing routine care as well as triaging, complex diseases. And then that leaves us as surgeons to do surgery and to do the upper level procedures. Whereas you used to think about, you know, I'm sure that Bill and Gordon Backer, they wrote,
Gordy,
I'm sure they wrote thousands to hundreds of thousands of glasses prescriptions over their lifetime. The current ophthalmologist at the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin will do some glasses prescriptions, but we're basically doing surgery because our optometrists do that for us. And we need to do that because there's just not a physician, not enough physicians around to do the surgery. So the day is very, very busy, which means that you got to figure out how to be patient for the rest of your life to balance that out.
It's a good life lesson.
Good life lesson and good plant care lesson as well.
Yeah. Yes. Let's back up a second. Can you tell us what it was like to be, Matt was homecoming king at UW-Madison while he was there too. Let's not forget that while he was going to medical school and doing all this, he also had time to become homecoming king.
Yeah, how did that happen? I mean, not that you don't deserve it, but
I would agree. How did that happen exactly? So, the way that the University of Wisconsin-Madison does their homecoming, which I've learned that the, and this was back 25 years ago when I was part of homecoming.
Not high school homecoming. That was college. Nick Pavlovich, I believe.
Yeah, Nick.
College at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, of all the university.
40,000 students.
Matt Ashbrenner became homecoming king.
Yes. So the homecoming committee, which I've learned is the largest non-paid committee of any of the college system, was part of Madison. And so homecoming was big. The homecoming committee, which was a volunteer committee, chose who was on court. And the way that you got on court was you had to be nominated by a student organization. So to take a step back from that, the student organization that nominated me was Elizabeth Waters Residence Hall, which today means nothing at all because it's a co-ed dorm.
Back then, it was an all-girls dorm.
That I am the first male student in the history of the University of Wisconsin-Madison to live at Elizabeth Waters. Wow. They never let boys in before.
Why did they nominate you? Easy on the eyes.
I was the only male there, and I was what was called the student leadership advisor. So in Madison and in college, you have what are called RAs or house fellows.
Mm-hmm.
I did that as well. But then as part of the student community, there was typically a senior or graduate student who is in charge of the monies that each student had as part of housing. And they would throw programs, they would do leadership. So it was called a student leadership advisor. And basically your job was to facilitate freshmen, sophomores having a great time, not only allowing them to have events, but also to decompress, to deal with, you know, stresses of life, things like that. And we were trained in a whole bunch of things. And so I was a student leadership advisor, and because Elizabeth Waters had an apartment suite in it, they randomly thought, I think the people who chose me just all got together and were like, we're just going to do this as a social experiment. In fact, I'm sure there's a dissertation on me being the only male in this all-female dormitory.
Pretty big dormitory, too.
Massive dormitory. Yeah. So I got put in this dormitory, and because I was a student leadership advisor, the girls tend to like me. I got to throw all these parties. That's maybe why I run an event center, you know? And so they're like, we're going to nominate you, because I think one of them was also involved in the homecoming committee. So like, I think as a joke, they nominated me. And because I got nominated by Liz Waters, I was a shoo-in to get all the interviews, you know, because like the first chunk of applicants you have to sift through. And I think I immediately got put like, no matter what, this, we're going to interview this kid because he's got a story. And so then what you do is you interview with the key leaders of the homecoming committee, and then they choose like 15 students.
Okay.
And then to narrow it down to 10 students, maybe it was 30, to narrow it down to 10 students, you interview with like the chancellor, the director of the alumni association, board of regents.
Jeez.
Like they bring the upper
intimidating.
So I did all that.
What year was this?
So it was 2001.
Which you were a junior?
I was a senior.
Oh, geez.
Okay. Yeah, so I was a senior. And the thing is it was, if you guys recall, it was right after 9/11.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So homecoming was right after 9/11. Right. So it was just this weird time. I remember a lot of the questions had to deal with 9/11 and rebuilding and how you're going to be a good alumni and all that stuff. You know, and apparently I answered the questions well enough that I was on court. The court is made up of 5 males, 5 females. They do 3 upperclassmen and 2 lowerclassmen. So the upperclassmen could be a combination of juniors and seniors.
Okay.
For us, it was two senior males, one junior boy, and then we had a sophomore and a freshman, and then it was the same. We had essentially female cohorts that were the same.
Okay.
And then you spend 2 weeks of homecoming doing all sorts of community service, URA events.
PR.
And then at the end of the 2 weeks, it's those same leaders that first interviewed you that get to vote, and they tell you going in, basically, we're going to pick who we think best represents the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somehow they thought I was the, based on the 2 weeks of knowing me, they thought I was the best.
Was it, did the girl win homecoming queen then too that you were with?
So my date was the senior girl. I thought she was a shoo-in because I thought she was like, if there was anyone to describe Wisconsin, but yeah. It was actually the junior girl. So I thought like, because they announced King first and I like was like, oh, well, like you're going to be queen and we're just going to stay on. And then they announced a different queen.
Oh.
Who was very enthusiastic and great. And she was a great queen.
Yeah.
So we had a senior male king and a junior female queen. And then that gets announced the Friday before the football game.
Yeah.
And then they basically just parade you around.
Yeah, because you were
so cool.
You got to go on the field.
Yeah, and there was a Dodge Viper back then. You got to drive around on the field. I got to do push-ups. If you remember, they used to do the like tuba tower, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't do that anymore, probably for liability purposes.
Yeah.
I got to be on the top of the tower. And so I remember doing push-ups and all that jazz.
So then how long were your obligations going on after that then?
That was pretty much it.
No, that's it.
They do kind of tag you around for other things like alumni weekend that then happens in the springtime. They like call me back up and kind of like, but that was predominantly it. It was just the 2 weeks of.
Do they ever have a reunion?
So no. However, this fall now coming up in 2026 is our 25th year reunion. I'm actually in the early stages of contacting the new director of the Wisconsin Alumni Association. I'm going to try to get
pull
back
stuff together. Yeah, nice.
That'd be cool. And how did you meet your wife, Kristen?
So Kristen and I met at State Street Brats.
All right.
Classic Wisconsin story.
That's great.
It was not flip night, but it was my birthday, actually. And we met at a bar and we hit it off and it just worked out.
What a great love story.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, State Street Brats, is that the same bar that Chris Farley left from and ran down State Street either naked or half naked?
Sounds about right.
That's probably true because it's right on State Street. I mean, Bratz is still there.
Iconic.
Very iconic.
And you met on your birthday, though?
We met on my birthday. Oh. Best birthday present I could possibly have.
Where is she from?
So Kristen is from the greater Milwaukee area. She went to Heartland Arrowhead.
So you recruited her back to come to Wausau.
It was a somewhat difficult recruitment because, as you can imagine, it basically came down to the greater Milwaukee area and Wausau. The job was better in Wausau than the greater Milwaukee area.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what won out. I think anybody that moves here that's not from here, it can be a little bit difficult. We as Wausaunians tend to stick together as Wausaunians, although we are, I think, very welcoming as people. But between having kids in other groups, we've just kind of reconnected with, you know, some of my old high school friends and then just developed a bunch of new friendships. And she very much is a very pro Wausau all the way URA at this point in time. However, she rubbed in my face that Heartland Arrowhead destroyed Wausau West in the first round of the playoffs.
That's true.
We were in Palm Springs at that moment. And I was like, Kristen, Wausau West beat Heartland. She's like, didn't even flinch. She's like, no, they didn't. She's like, how bad? What is it? And I was like, I don't know. I was like 5-12. I don't know. I'm like, don't even. So every year come fall, she just rubs in how great Heartland Arrowhead is and how they have like this turf field, which is like now 20 years old. And their football and basketball locker rooms were featured in a Sports Illustrated article years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest schools in the state.
It is. It's one of the biggest schools in the state. They have private boxes for their high school.
Oh my god!
Part of the stadium. It's crazy. And it's like, you know, the University of Wisconsin at Heartland Arrowhead. So anyways, Kristen's from Heartland Arrowhead, but she's glad to be back. And you know, I'm a Warhawk fan too.
But most importantly, go Warriors!
Go Warriors! You know, I'm a Matt Johnson through and through. Go Warriors!
Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Ashbrenner. Thanks for coming on the Wausau Business Show, Matt.
Appreciate it, gentlemen.
Great cocktail. Happy holidays.
Please stay. I want you, I need you, oh God. Don't take these beautiful things that I've got. Please stay. I want you, I need you, oh these beautiful things that I've got. Oh,
here on the back of Infuse, which is just an open kind of warehousing space, right?
Yeah, it's essentially a warehouse space that we have back here. Basically, I wanted to create a little outdoor citrus grove, which, of course, to keep citrus trees alive during the winter is a bit of a challenge. And so we've got back here some stainless steel beds of lemon and lime trees. There's also some Texas sage back there as well.
You just have to keep it above freezing? Or
you just got to keep it above freezing. Okay. They'll essentially go dormant.
Wow.
And some of the flowering plants will actually lose their flowers, lose their leaves. They will look like they're not doing very well. In fact, we got a couple of crabapple trees here that have some leaves on them, but those stickly trees are peach trees.
Wow, cool.
And the peach trees lose their leaves, and you can tell it kind of happens all at once. It's very dramatic. And every year, I think they're going to die. You don't have to water them very much. And then in the springtime, they get gorgeous blossoms like cherry blossoms.
Is it true, like, you should talk to the plants? Is that a thing that works?
Photosynthesis is all about having carbon dioxide and turning it into oxygen. Yeah, yeah. So as you spew out carbon dioxide, right. Yes, your plants like to feed on that. And every spring, these little peach trees come back and they blossom again. And we actually got a peach harvest for the first time. They're three-year-old trees. I got a peach harvest out of them this past year.
By just keeping them outside here?
So as soon as they start to blossom, come around April, I move them over to, because they're beautiful, I move them over into the event venue side because we let the public enjoy them. And as soon as there's no risk of a frost, I throw them outside. They usually are budding peaches by about April-ish time. And then the peaches mature. And this year we harvested them around July, August.
How rare do you think it is to have a peach harvest in the state of Wisconsin?
Pretty rare, right?
You got to be a pretty good eye doctor to make that happen.
I think for people who do plants and who are very good with plants, I think probably it's not super difficult. However, and there are some peach species that you can get that are right around survivable in Wisconsin. Mm. These are a little bit cold hardy, but they're kind of a zone 5 to 6, and we're more of a 4 to 5. And so,
like, latitudinally?
It's all latitudinally. Okay. And it's basically how much of a bad frost.
Anytime I can use latitudinally, he pulls it out. Yeah.
Exactly. So I was just like, hey, I'm going to do this. In the first year that I brought them in, I thought that they just died, and I didn't realize how dramatically deciduous they are. Uh-huh. But they grew back the next year.
Cool.
We've been doing it every year since. So we got our little citrus grove back here.
Those grow lights are bright. At what point is it damaging to your eyes? I'm going to make you do both roles here. Look at a bright light
like
that. So
there is something called solar retinopathy, which is where if you stare at the sun too long, it can burn your retina. These grow lights you would have to stare at for a couple of hours pretty intently to get damage. But as you can tell, just staring at them for a few seconds to minutes is uncomfortable. Yeah. And it's your body saying, look away. My retina is being damaged. Don't do that. I think that's why people are worried about solar eclipses. It's not that the sun's light is so much more damaging. It's just that you are now staring at the sun very intensely, which you wouldn't normally do.
And your body's not used to
it. It's not like the eclipse itself somehow magically empowers the sun. It's just that it's a time where you should never look at the sun, including an eclipse. Mm-hmm. And everyone tends to get a little dramatic about the eclipse. And it's not that the eclipse is a problem. You just shouldn't stare at the sun at all.
Right. Do you know when the next eclipse is?
I don't.
It's probably. As an eye doctor.
You can only refer
You are a doctor.
Yes, right.
What's your favorite car over here? This white one with the red interior that's a convertible looks cool.
The white one with the red interior that's a convertible is a...
lot going on back here.
It's a 1956 Corvette.
Wow.
It is an all-original car. I'm the third owner of it, and the second owner was an auction house that I bought it through Kansas, and the first owner was a man in Florida. It has, I think, like 60,000 original miles.
Only 60,000 miles on it?
61,092.9 original miles on it.
Is this all original then?
I probably put 2,000 miles on it.
So, God.
Yeah, so the original owner just kept it in pristine condition, which is what I'm continuing to do for it. Like, the interior, all of it is essentially fresh. We installed seat belts because they did not come standard in 1956, and I felt the need to have the seat belts. But essentially, the engine block, everything is original.
Look at this.
Like, it's just, not only is the whole car beautiful, the engine is beautiful.
It's brand new.
Chrome, the stainless steel, the paint, it's all original.
This is gorgeous. How do the airbags work?
not as good as what they're supposed to. I think that's why Ralph Nader had a problem with these cars, you know. But
Ralph Nader.
It was actually the Corvair that he had a problem with.
But we don't get political, but it's pretty fine to crack a Ralph Nader joke.
To crack a Ralph Nader joke.
When did Corvettes start rolling off the production line?
1953 was the first Corvette. If you look at a 53, a 54, and a 55 Corvette, they look very different than this Corvette. And they were a little boxier. They didn't have the sales that they wanted. And there was a gentleman by the name of Zora Arkus Dunkoff. Crazy name, right? Who was a designer.
Dunkoff.
Right? Who was a designer at General Motors. And they said, our Corvette line is dying. We want something new. We want something fresh. So he designed the 1956 Corvette. The 56s and 57s are essentially identical. The engine changed in them, but the bodies. This is the Barbie Corvette. So when you, not the newer Barbie Corvette, but the older Barbie Corvette. And so when you look at the cove and then you come around front. Cool.
Yeah, look at that.
And you look at the headlights in the front. If you say it, you'll never unsee it. Zora Arkus Dunkoff was trying to create a car out of a shark. So a shark was his muse.
Okay.
So if you look at the grill, kind of like shark's teeth, and then the whole cove kind of gets you this look of what is essentially an almost like a fin of like a shark.
Yeah.
And then up
until got the gray there like the shark.
Yeah. Okay. Up until 1963, they just did a bunch of variations. They added extra headlights. They put a little chrome in the cove. So they did those things. And then in 1963, it came with a whole new lineup. If you think of the Austin Powers Corvette, those were mid-60s Corvettes. And they did that up until the Stingray in the late 60s, early 70s.
Can you fire it up quick, or is that?
I will try.
I think the audience might like to hear that.
We're going to give it a try.
Let's see. Let's fire it up. Can you fire it up? Let's see if you can fire it up. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I noticed the keys are in the ignition.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you are a doctor after all.
Keys are in the ignition. Let's see if the...
Let's
see if this bad boy turns over. What did you have to flip a switch in the
engine block? These are all a beast. So I turn the...
Double pumping the gas.
Yeah. It's not going to start
Come on, baby! Not going to start
the first time. It's going to be about the third.
The third? He knows this baby.
Every car has their own little turnover cycle.
Yeah. Battery's good.
Well, the battery is, that's what I had where I.
Oh, you plugged it in?
Correct, essentially.
Come on, baby. Inject that fuel. Is that what's going on here?
So it is, the fuel injectors.
Do these things flood?
All the time.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. In fact, it's probably what I've done with this one, but it usually will pop by now.
Come on, baby.
It goes up to 140.
If we slide back, the Buick is a little more reliable. We can
slide back. This one's covered.
Look at this Buick.
I got to get the battery hooked back up.
Look at this Buick. White Buick. What year is this?
It's a 1962.
1962.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. They're so clean.
Also white with red interior.
So you drove this around while in medical school?
It's my last year of medical school. My fourth year of medical school, I have this. The University of Wisconsin, what are our colors?
Look at that.
Yeah.
Get it.
Oh, yeah.
Another white exterior with red interior for the Badgers. I love it.
Also a convertible as well. So.
And you have to plug in the battery. Is that what you're doing?
There's a little dial here so that, you know, it doesn't.
Oh, light just went on. Okay. Interior lights just went on. What year are we dealing with here?
62.
A little bit newer. And this is automatic transmission.
Oh, fancy.
Oh, this is an automatic. Okay, here we go.
Coming up.
Here we go, baby. Come on.
Pop. Let's hear a pop.
I think she's coming.
Come on, baby.
Oh.
Yeah!
There we go. All right. We got it.
We have liftoff.
Listen to her purr, Paul. She's just purring.
This is how cars are made to be driven right here.
Probably not in the winter, though.
Never in the winter, no. That's why these cars have existed.
Look at this.
They don't know what salt is.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Thanks a lot for giving us a tour.
What does it take to run a successful business? It takes incredible courage to start at the beginning.
incredible grit to achieve success, incredible determination to sustain results, and incredible perseverance to leave a legacy. But most importantly, it takes an incredible local partner dedicated to helping you achieve your goals. At Incredible Bank, we are that partner. Let us help your business do the incredible. Incredible Bank, member FDIC.
From Tom and Jerry's at the Domino to last-minute shopping at KB Toy Store, happy holidays from the Wausau Business Show with Ryan and Paul.
Green Heck Turner Center, December 20th. That'll be fun.
Can't wait.
Do a 5K with Santa Claus.
Cool.
Santa Claus. But right now, friend of a friend competition finalist, Julie's on the horn. Julie! Hey, Julie, are you there?
I'm here.
Julie, you are one of the finalists for the Friend of a Friend competition. Move people to live and work in Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
Yeah, way to go, Julie.
You're in the top three. Where's your leaderboard at these days?
You know, of course, we have our STEM outreach coordinator here, Allison Stoffel. So, yes, we did.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to Wausau, Allison.
So you've got a total of one then?
At this time, yes, one at this time. But I'm trying hard, let me tell you.
So she doesn't have any family or friends. We're going to be living under the same roof or relatives or anything that she's bringing along?
Not at this time, but, you know, maybe. Well, we'll see. I'll see if I could go farther at the family tree to find more.
Okay, because you're in second place right now, in second or third place.
Right, top three for sure.
Okay, that's good to know. That's wonderful. I'm going to have to really work harder now.
Are you going to be able to, like, move the needle in the next couple of weeks, you think?
I don't know. I'm going to have to try my hardest.
Okay, because we're going
to... Well, who's the top contender? That's what I want to know.
That's confidential. Well, we're going to try to get everybody in here to sort it out. The top three contenders for the Friend of a Friend competition, sponsored by Strongbridge Wealth Advisors and Greenfire Builders of the Future. And the grand finalists will all come in and then we'll reveal it.
How exciting.
Oh, nice. All right. Awesome.
All right. Nice work so far. Have a nice weekend. We'll talk to you later.
See ya.
Have a good weekend. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Same to you. Yeah.
Julie. All right.
Thanks, Julie.
Julie. All right.
Nice work.
Coming up in a couple of weeks on the Wausau Business Show, we are honored to have Mitch Vigut.
Oh, from Aircraft.
From the band Aircraft.
Yeah.
One of Wausau's famous exports. They topped Billboard charts with some of their songs in the 80s, and I don't know about the 90s.
I think maybe the 90s,
too. Sure. Yeah, let's go with that. Aircraft coming up, and Mitch Vigut and the Wausau Business Show.
That'll be fun.
So until next time, from high atop Rib Mountain, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Paul.
And this has been a Wausau Business Show transmission.
The end.
Oh. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
This is fun.
I'm bloated.
Already?
I should have been a cowboy. I should have learned to rope and ride. Wearing my six-shooter, riding my pony on a cattle drive. Stealing a young girl's heart. Just like Gene and Roy. Singing those campfire songs. Oh, I should have been a cowboy.
DNA Wausau Business Show Transmission. All rights reserved 2025.
Hello, my name is Maureen Carlson of Greenfire Management Services. Greenfire is a trusted local commercial construction manager. Greenfire provides detailed and innovative services so you can focus on growing your business. We're all about helping companies and communities thrive, so Greenfire is pleased to sponsor the Friend of a Friend competition to support the continual growth of Central Wisconsin. Contact us today to discuss your next construction project. Learn more at greenfire.com. That's greenfire.com.
Discover the Milk Merchant, nestled in downtown Wausau's River West District, where every selection is curated with care and where every bite tells a story. The Milk Merchant brings you an exquisite collection of Wisconsin and imported cheeses, charcuterie boards, specialty foods, and unique home goods. Our love for quality food drives us to support local dairy farmers and artisans. Stop in to sample a selection of the finest Wisconsin cheeses, from Pleasant Ridge Reserve to the legendary 15-year-age cheddar. Mention this ad for a free wine sample. Let us curate a gift basket perfect for any occasion, or join us on a culinary adventure by by signing up for one of our events at themilkmerchant.com.
Hi, I'm Eric Cannenberg from Rocket Industrial.
Hey, this is Jerry Seibert.
And this is Kelly Seibert.
I'm Bob Rue.
And I'm Angela Toshner.
Hey, this is Sam over at 72nd Avenue.
Hello, I'm Tong Tao.
This is Chad Wallen.
Hey, this is Dom.
Hey, this is Cody.
And I'm Rob.
This is Craig Steiff.
This is Nate Callahan.
Hey, Rocket Industrial.
Just some of the reasons why Rocket Industrial has been certified a great place to work. 9 years running. Forward-thinking companies throughout the United States that want a package with less, choose Rocket Industrial. RocketIndustrial.com.
In a landscape carved by billion-year-old glaciers sits a community rich with history and opportunity. A base camp to the outdoors and the Northwoods, where miles of rivers tempt paddlers and the fresh scent of pine fills the air on every trail. A base camp to theater, to the arts, experience through the color of diverse festivals, farm-to-table and craft beverages. A community that prides itself on Midwest nice and knows how to four-season better than any other. Wisconsin's base camp. Visit Wausau.
Oh, I love your podcast. It is awesome.
Thanks for doing what you guys do.
Yeah, boy.
You betcha. This
is Crazy Caller Brian from California.
The Mansion.
Yeah.
What's up, business show?
He's on the radio to talk about the gardens. Whoa, whoa, whoa. From Monk to just the salt, they want to expand. But the people said bring Monk back to the land.
I had tears of joy rolling down my cheeks. The arrival and departure at the Red Lobster was broadcasting genius.
Every entree comes with two warm cheddar biscuits.
Keep up the good work.
As the new mayor of Wausau, I would welcome Red Lobster to our great city.
I can't wait to visit Wausau.
This is the legendary Wausau Business Show with Ryan and Paul.
Are we still your favorite radio hosts of all time, Moms?
Absolutely.
Of course you are.
The number one show for and about Wausau.
I'd like to refer to him as Robert W. Monk.
What's that spell?
Yeah, you're going to Florida.
Are you kidding me?
Okay, what's your favorite Wausau business show?
You guys.
Oh, good answer.
The Wausau Business Show.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.